There you go, this music, of course, from Rory Gallagher, and although he passed away 15 years ago this month, his popularity shows no sign of waning, and of course that's the way it should be. So to honour him, at this year's Rory Gallagher International Tribute Festival, a life-size statue is being unveiled in Rory's hometown of Ballyshannon in Donegal. Tell us more about the festival. I'm joined on the line by Rory's brother and former manager, Donald Gallagher, and former Whitesnake guitarist, Bernie Marsden. Donald and Bernie, you're both very welcome to the programme. Donald, I'm going to start with you. A life-size statue. Is that the ultimate tribute?
It's got to be, isn't it? I mean, it's fortunately, one can't recreate Rory, maybe in an android world you might be able to in the future, but I think the statue is as close as we're going to get. And it's looking brilliant.
Okay, so you've seen it and it's all ready to go and it's being done tomorrow, isn't it? And that's the day it's going to be done?
Yeah, unveiled tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock.
Right, indeed. So what happens tomorrow night? I mean, is there a special sort of thing going on?
Well, there's a sort of pre-reception, obviously, to introduce the various parties together. A lot of family travelling up from Cork, with the Lord Mayor of Cork and the Lord Mayor of County Donegal. And then there'll be music for the unveiling from Johnny Gallagher, no relation, right. He's out of Bundoran. Johnny's a regular at the festival, a guitar player. And afterwards there's Simon, who's a guitar player, plays with Robert Plant.
Right.
He's going to do a set tomorrow.
You see, Donald, just in terms of like tributes and all the rest of it, like, I mean, you know, I know that isn't there a road in Cork? But certainly the Rory Gallagher Way in Dublin, because I was there for the unveiling of that with yourself and the Edge in terms of the in Temple Bar. And I think there might be something in Germany as well. Did Ballyshannon slip in quicker than Cork? Because a lot of people say, look, we know he was born in Ballyshannon, but Rory's Cork.
No, in fairness to Cork, already have Rory Gallagher Place.
Yeah.
And there is a tribute there, a sculpture by Geraldine Creedon, a very renowned sculptor, who did it, but it's more abstract. And partly to do with the time, that was so soon after Rory had passed away, my mother was still in grief, and the idea of something like a statue of gold or a stone didn't, it just kind of unnerved her a little bit. So, and in fact, Geraldine, there's a magnificent sculpture there, which is strands of hair and guitar strings with Rory's lyrics on it. It's a beautiful piece. No, Cork and Furness they weren't outdone. They never get outdone.
Right, okay. Now, I want to go on over to you, Bernie, because, Bernie, I've interviewed, like, a bunch of guitarists down through the years, Slash a few times, and every time I interview Slash, he always mentions Rory Gallagher. I presume I can now add another one to the list. You're playing at the festival, and I presume Rory was a huge influence on you.
Rory was that? Huge influence. And hi, Darren, by the way.
Hi, Bernie.
Hi, mate. The whole generation, I think Rory was just a bit older than me, and me and all my contemporaries, the first time we saw him, obviously, was when he came over with the tape. And once you saw this man play the guitar, I was like, oh, you better think again here, you know. And then coupled with his character, the type of fella he was, and, you know, who could not be a fan? And then when you became fortunate enough to become kind of friendly with him, you know, it was double the pleasure all the time.
So could I say in some ways, Bernie, that, like, since you are a former Whitesnake and, you know, so much great rock and roll days, etc., when you say the kind of person Rory was, isn't it fair to say that Rory was one of the quietest, most gentle people you've ever met in your entire life?
Absolutely. But the greatest other side of the coin was the magnetism and the power that he then gave to you in performance. And that was a huge influence on me, as well as the guitar player, the way that somebody could be so powerful, so dominating on the stage, having a good time and making sure the people had a good time. And then to be so quiet and gentle off the stage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It was a wonderful wonderful pairing.
Okay, well, I'll tell you, a little bit of track here now, which goes right back to those early days. Post-Taste, first solo album, it's simply called Rory Gallagher. This is probably still my favourite Rory Gallagher album. And this song here is called I Fall Apart. I'm The song called I Fall Apart, that is of course Rory Gallagher from his debut solo album Post Haste. But staying back there, both you, Bernie, and you, Donald, and there was a time, because there's been an awful lot of stuff in the news in the last week or two from that time, because the Rolling Stones Exile on Main Street album is back out again. Around that time, Donald, do you remember, like, was Rory ever seriously going to join the Rolling Stones? What was all that about?
Well, it was a serious communication, because it was at a point in time where the Stones seemed to be in a little bit of disarray, and as one could see from that program, the quality of Taylor's playing and what he added to the Stones on that album is obviously not as the classic. But that had to be sorted, and the person that suited would have it seemed to be Rory at that time. He was the one to get the first phone call. In fact, it's about after midnight when Ian Stewart, God rest him, the keyboard player and one of the original members, called and looking for Rory. And at that time, in paranoia of Ireland in the 70s, you weren't quite sure who was what it was about, because he didn't address it. And in fact, when I went in and woke Rory up, because we'd driven from Belfast overnight the night before, so Rory thought I was just winding him up and refused to take the call. So I told him to call back, and they called back a second time, and then Rory answered the call and invited him over. And that was the start in early January. I think it was around the 6th of January, recording in Rotterdam. And then that kept getting moved. It got changed 3 or 4 times for the month of January. Each time they would say, well, the mobile isn't ready, but I think that was a euphemism for Keith being ready. So then Rory did go over on the eve of his own Japanese tour. Stayed with him for 4 nights, and there were a lot of different factors. Rory wouldn't allow anybody to travel with him, meaning myself. I was saying to Rory, and he said, this is only a jam session. Rory, as you rightly said, he was so self-evasive and completely, saying this is, oh no, they just want a jam. And I said, well, why would they want you to do that in London? And anyway, off he went. The Strat and a small little Fender Champ amp, and he was greeted at the airport by Mick Jagger himself. They got to the studio, and Marshall Chess Jr. said to Rory, welcome to Rolling Stones, we knew you'd be the guy for the job. So at that point, the first session happened that night, and Keith didn't come down whatsoever. So Rory worked with Mick on some material. Like, why he debated as to which guitar riff it was, but the next day day, then Keith did come down, and then by the night Rory, the last night Rory had, said, well, look, I'm going to be on a flight to Tokyo tomorrow. And remember, at that time, the Stones were absolutely banned from Japan. They would never get to Japan because of drug charges at that time. So internationally, Rory had a call to make. And anyway, Mick said, well, look, would you go up to Keith's room and chat? Keith wants to have a good chat with you. And Rory went up to Keith's room. He was comatose, and Rory stayed up the whole night, and he never came round. Keith didn't wake up, so Rory just literally packed his bag, got on the plane. He arrived at Heathrow Airport. I met him with a suitcase and flew to Tokyo. You know, and this is the day before emails and faxes and communications. And he just said, well, if you really want me, then, you know, I've my tour to do. He wouldn't let fans down. That was the thing. I mean, I remember saying to him, look, what you should have done, postpone the Japanese tour and sell more tickets. The manager part of it, but he wouldn't do that to fans.
I've never heard that story before, so I have to ask, are the recordings available from that one time, even minus Keith?
I did ask Sherry Daly at the Stones office at one point because of a pending tribute album to Rory, and they said they'd have a look and, you know, Ian Stewart was the one with the mobile, which then got left to Bill. In fact, Rory was forming the Wyman's Rhythm Kings. Rory was with Bill. They formed that together, but then Rory dropped out. Obviously, he wasn't well enough, and he was in the throes of, and I was negotiating with Bill to take the mobile. So, and at that time, Ian Stewart was the one who would have logged all the tapes, or probably would have known where the tapes were. And,
when you say mobile, you mean the traveling recording studio?
The Rolling Stones mobile, yes.
Yeah. As opposed to a phone. Okay.
Bernie,
listen, Bernie, that's an amazing story. I didn't really know
that. Isn't that fascinating hearing it from
Bernie? I bet you might have heard something just as much as I did, but you didn't know that much detail, did you?
There's always rumours and stories, but then I've never even discussed that side of things, but to hear it like straight from the horse's mouth is fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
And the wife thing, we recorded two albums with the Stones mobile as well, straight.
You didn't write a song called Smoke on the Water. I see Purple
did
about
that one. Because
they certainly used it in the lyrics. And just tell us, what are you doing these days, Bernie? I mean, are there any whitesnaking with you anymore, or what's going on?
No, that's a long time since I was in whitesnake. I had a kind of a retro whitesnake for a while called M3, and we did all the stuff we recorded, but that ended about 3.5 years ago. Since then, I got my own sort of rhythm and blues band, and I do acoustic stuff. And then about a year and a half ago, I decided to do this Bernie Plays Rory thing. So the first thing I did was got in contact with Donald, and I didn't want him to think, you know, I wanted him to know about it. And, you know, like, Rory was such a, you know, an important man, you know, and I didn't want to stress to Donald that I wasn't going to be a tribute thing. I wasn't going to go out there and, you know, in a check shirt with a beat-up strap. It's just me. It's me playing Rory's music, which I love.
And when you say Bernie plays Rory, which Rory? I mean,
well, it's right from the Taste onwards.
All right, okay.
And so I'd probably go because the guys in the band are two of the guys who were last with Rory, which is him on drums and David Levy on bass.
All right.
So there's a natural feel there for some of the later stuff as well, which is great.
I mean, like, so much of what Rory's music is based in the blues, obviously, and the blues is what people say about Rory all the time, which is actually something that kind of annoys me. Regardless of how much of a great blues kind of person he was also a writer of great rock songs, and people seem to forget that, I think.
Well, I think the answer to that one is people who maybe discovered him from that kind of era didn't go back, maybe, to things like Blister on the Moon and stuff, but that's heavy rock. That's great rock guitar playing, and he never lost that.
Blister on the Moon, Born the Last Time, What's Going On, all those kind of things.
All that stuff. Railway and Gun. They're the beautiful mix of the two. And it's just the way he performed and the way he wanted to do stuff. And so you never knew. You could go see him three nights in a row, you wouldn't hear the same song three times.
So was any band in the mid-60s, in terms of Fleetwood Mac and the Stones, would try maybe to nod towards the blues artists they would have stolen from for the 40s and 50s? Your one is Rory, is it? You would nod to Rory.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think the simplicity of my first discovery, Rory, which is the Woven Music Festival, which Donald will remember, I guess, and Jimi Hendrix the top of the bill. So, you know, you're about their age, you know, 17, 18 or 16 or whatever. So you're going to see Jimi Hendrix, and that's all you really care about. But certainly outcomes is the thing, ladies and gentlemen from Ireland, this is the Taste. This guy, you know, I'm like 30 feet away from him, watching this guy play. Oh, my God. You know, what's this? And, you know, it was like almost like for a couple of hours or whatever, I was like, well, Jimi Hendrix, so what? I want to see this guy.
Right.
And once you got that in your blood, that's it.
And then, Donald, on that note then, like, I mean, obviously there's pivotal moments all the way through, but if you think about the late blues boom in the 1960s, etc., could I point to one thing and say, the Isle of Wight Festival taste?
Yes.
That's it, is it?
It's such a tremendous gig, but it was such a downer to know the band was splitting up that day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It wasn't it, but by the same token, I mean, like, you know, he was embarking on the solo career, the career that people know from the 1970s.
Yeah, I mean, he really didn't know where he was going. I mean, he was really at sea. I mean, you didn't have media lawyers, you didn't have people who could advise you then. In fact, he was trying to get legal advice about his management situation through a solicitor my mother knew in Cork, who knew somebody who lived, a solicitor who was in London. So it was as vague as that.
Do you know the way, Donald, that a lot of people were on the road too much, and some people needed to be on the road even more? For instance, like, you could say there was a Def Leppard guitarist who, when he was off the road, didn't know what to do. That happens a lot to a lot. But with Rory, you think in some ways, Rory, the road wasn't necessarily good for Rory because it made him more lonely than he might have been.
Double-edged sword. It was something I wrestled with all the time. Rory couldn't function if he wasn't on the road. He really needed a schedule. At one point in 1990, managed to bulk him to go into hospital to take a rest, to really look at himself. His health was failing at that point. And when he came out after 2 weeks, the doctors just said to me, you have to give him a schedule. Because I thought, well, let's take 6 months off. And Rory wouldn't take a holiday. The idea of going on a plane to Spain or anywhere sunny was just thing. And,
But, I mean, what about post-gig on the road then, finally? I mean, like, you know, Bernie, I'm sure you enjoyed yourself in Whitesnake post-gig. My point about Rory being, but, like, did he kind of go into his hotel room and kind of, did he like to be alone, lock himself away?
Well, I can relate exactly to what Donald's talking about, is that the thing with talking about Rory is we would spend time, for instance, in Earl's Court, when maybe we haven't done New Zealand, there'd be a gang, a bunch of musicians, you know, and you sit there and some people would always come over and say, you know, Rory Gallagher or whatever, and by that time, you know, you become sort of quite well known yourself. You'd be sitting having a drink, and of course you'd have a drink with Rory, and you say, well, where are you going tonight? And you say, oh, I'm going to pop over so and so, I'm going here, or I'm going to the Marquee or something. Mm. Because what none of us ever realised or put together was that Rory was going home, probably just to wait for the next gig. And, you know, maybe a lot of us were going out to maybe a girlfriend and families and stuff, and, you know, or not. But because it was Rory Gallagher, you know, this big star in everybody's eyes, you never sort of ever thought that he would be going home, you know, and not going somewhere to hang out with Eric Clapton or Jeff Beck or something. You know? I think he needed his stuff on the road. Whenever I saw him, like, he was always twice as happy on the road whenever I saw him at gigs. He was always full of telling chats and stories and stuff. And, you know, he was always much more vibrant around the gig situation when I saw him.
All right, listen, guys, just enjoy yourself tomorrow, Bernie, and thanks a million for talking to me. By the way, it is acoustic and electric for you, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit of both. A little bit of everything, and hopefully some people will really enjoy.
And Donald, congratulations, and it's been a real pleasure once again. But just finally then, 30 million album sales, etc. The name Rory Gallagher, the sales of Rory Gallagher, it still goes on, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. It's tremendous. It would be great if it had happened in his time. I mean, that's the unfortunate side of it. The legacy is there. I think he always knew it. It wouldn't have made a difference to him one way or another whether it had sold in his time. But he knew what he was making was classic.
Yeah, and you always knew as well, because I met you 6 months before Rory died in 1995 around at some festival, I don't know where it was, in London, and you were like, you were saying things are not good with Rory, which I didn't know too much about, so you kind of knew, did you?
Well, for a few years you felt that if things don't change, the inevitable is going to happen, and you know, you do things to, you try to engineer a person's life and creating consequences, so yeah. Which can rebound on you as well. So it's a difficult dilemma to be in. And then you try and go stage back and you go with the flow and say, well, let's stay on the road. And by the way, with Bernie, he's got two of the good famous musicians with him. He's got Richard Newman.
Yeah, he's saying that, yeah.
And, who were with Rory. Well, I mean, those guys really were fantastic with Rory.
Well, I'm going to read out the full details of what's happening tomorrow night, all right, as in Rory Gallagher immortalised in bronze, we call it. So listen, Donald Gallagher and Bernie Marsden, thanks a million for talking to us. There's going to be another Rory track now, and then give you the full details about Bobby Shannon after this. Thank you very much indeed, guys.
Thanks a lot. Looking forward to seeing you. Bye, Donald.